From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this look at local and statewide news. Today is the final deadline for public comments on a proposal to exempt the Tongass National Forest from the roadless rule. As the deadline loomed, environmental groups increasingly tried to get the word out to encourage people to weigh in. Those conversations have taken place in physical spaces and also increasingly online. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Mary Catherine Martin works for Salmon State, an environmental advocacy group that works to protect waterways for salmon.
So I'm pulling this up on Salmon State's Instagram.
She says the videos the group created with its partners about the Tongass has had a big reach.
Breathe. Our elders always told us, E-A-N-E-A-Y-A. This is your land.
A Tlingit woman and a Yupik woman dressed in regalia talk about the cultural and environmental significance of the nation's largest national forest. Salmon and eagles make an appearance. The pacing of the video speeds up as chainsaws and falling trees blink on the screen. Martin estimates the video has been viewed on Instagram by more than 32,000 people, and her group is still adding up the numbers. She says the goal isn't just to get people to watch and share the content.
The main purpose of all of this, besides informing people about what's going on and the different ways the Tongass is valuable as an intact forest, is to get people to comment.
In February, the U.S. Forest Service logged over 140,000 comments on a draft version of changes to the roadless rule in the Tongass. Most of the commenters suggested keeping the rule in place. But in November, Department of Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue announced that, despite all those comments, the agency would recommend the Tongass be completely exempted from the roadless rule. According to the Forest Service, during this final comment period that started in October, 220,000 people have weighed in as of Monday. Over the weekend, Audubon Alaska helped host a webinar to guide people through the process of crafting their comments.
I know we are looking at questions from y'all. So
the format was personal, not stuffy. The instructors for the video appear to be in their homes. They include activists and a tribal government leader. 150 people watched on Facebook Live. Another 150 people have streamed it since then. Natalie Dawson, Audubon Alaska's executive director, says environmental groups have been making a special effort this go-round to bolster the numbers.
I mean, there's definitely been a bigger social media push for this than there has for other issues on the Tongass, 100% hands down.
Dawson says people have asked her if official comment periods really matter. After all, the last comment period didn't sway a top federal official from seeking a full rollback of the roadless rule in the Tongass. But Dawson thinks it does carry weight.
If the agency chooses to ignore the public and the public has made substantive comment, then that's grounds to pursue litigation and lawsuits.
At a church in Juneau, the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council took a different approach. In addition to the group's social media outreach, Executive Director Meredith Trainer says they wanted to invite people to draft comments on the eve of the deadline over bowls of salmon chowder.
It's also important to feel together, right? To feel a part of something bigger and to see each other and make eye contact.
One of the comments that went into the public record was in the form of a song.
We need to stand up for our old growth, keep those logging roads away. Let's stand up for the trees and keep the roadless rule today.
The U.S. Forest Service is expected to make its final decision on how the roadless rule applies to the Tongass in 2020. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Speakers and language learners from around the U.S. attended a week-long workshop in Anchorage with the goal of translating census materials. KNBA's Trip Krause talked with some of the panelists about their efforts.
At the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage, a group of about 25 people represented the Gwich'in, Inupiat, Yupik, and Koyukon cultures from Alaska. They gathered to translate materials for the 2020 census. Rochelle Adams, who's Gwich'in Athabascan, works as an Indigenous Language Specialist with the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or AGPIRG.
I've been doing language work. I've pretty much really dedicated my my life to this work, and I've done a lot of work in my home region and also statewide, but I have never seen anything like this happen. It's pretty incredible.
Organized by groups like ACPIRG and Alaska Counts, panelists sat at tables assigned by language, translating words on the census materials.
You know, translation work is really hard to do as individuals or alone, and especially because a lot of this work is really creating language around things that we don't have words for. And so, you know, it takes them being able to speak to each other and kind of scaffold that knowledge off of one another.
Anouk Olin is Inupiaq and a grad student in linguistics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Her family flew back to Alaska to be part of the workshop.
When we're translating census material into Inupiaq or Dinaka or Yupik, that means that we are telling different agencies that our languages matter and that we prefer to, and we require that we communicate in our languages across our communities and with federal or state institutions.
Olin's 8-month-old son, Doth, lies in her lap while she works alongside her own mom, translating the materials into Inupiaq. Olin says having three generations of her family with her is important.
My mom is here working on Inupiaq with me, and I also brought my son. I love this idea of three generations reclaiming our language.
Aside from the translation, multiple generations share stories about their cultures. Rochelle Adams, the language specialist, says one thing she's seen during the workshop is the healing that happens when Alaska Native people share those stories.
I'm just so excited about having this cross-cultural connection. It's been so incredible, and, you know, every day we also, you know, not just talk about language, but we're sharing, like, some really amazing cultural teachings with one another. I love to see these connections being built, you know, with one another from around the state.
Adams says she hopes that the framework they build at the workshop creates a standardization process and creates guidelines for future language translation projects. In Anchorage, I'm Tripp Kraus.
A Bethel Elementary School principal charged with online enticement of a minor and transferring obscene material to a minor had his first court appearance in Anchorage today. Agents with the FBI's Child Exploitation Task Force arrested Christopher Carmichael on December 11th. He's the principal of Bethel's Gladys Jung Elementary School. The agents also seized his school computers and told school officials that no children were in danger. Bethel police began investigating him in June when a former student reported that Carmichael had touched her inappropriately. According to the charging documents, Carmichael was later caught having explicit online conversations with a minor in November and again with an undercover FBI agent. On Tuesday, ushering Carmichael into the courtroom at the Anchorage Federal Courthouse was Jolene Godin. She's the FBI agent who had posed as the underage girl with whom Carmichael allegedly discussed explicit sexual activity. Carmichael had public defenders appointed to represent him. Then Magistrate Judge Matthew Scobel turned to the issue of detention. Assistant U.S. Attorney Kyle Reardon argued that Carmichael should be jailed to protect the public and to make sure he didn't run. Carmichael's attorney did not argue, and the judge ordered that Carmichael remain behind bars. Reardon, the prosecutor, said Carmichael did have some sort of health problem that contributed to delays in getting him to court to hear the charges. He didn't comment on the case, but Carmichael's attorney, Brooke Wannell, said that rumors about Carmichael having tried to commit suicide were false. Reardon also addressed a question about why it took from June, when the report started the investigation, to December, when agents arrested Carmichael. He said that getting warrants to monitor a person's communications can take time and that law enforcement wanted to build a solid case. Carmichael's next court date is set for Friday. Alaska Airlines embargo on new cargo from several bush communities like Nome and Kotzebue has been partially lifted. After going days without accepting any new freight shipments from Kodiak, Bethel, Nome, and Kotzebue and Dead Horse, airline spokesperson Tim Thompson says that Alaska Airlines' three 737-700 cargo jets came back into service over the weekend. And in the weather for the Juneau area, looks like freezing fog, numerous rain showers and scattered snow showers, little or no snow accumulation, highs in the mid-30s, east winds to 10 miles an hour. That's it for news from the KTOO Newsroom. If you missed our local newscast today, you can find it in a podcast at ktoo.org/listen. You've been listening to All Things Considered on KTOO Juneau. I'm Rasha McChesney.